Welcome to the Revision Path Podcast, the showcase of the world's black graphic designers, web designers, and web developers. I'm Aris Cherry, and before we get started, I wanted to remind you again about our survey. This is the last week for it. It only takes a few minutes to complete, and your feedback will really help shape the future of Revision Path. Just go to revisionpath.com/survey to fill that out. Also, we're now available on iTunes and Stitcher. Just visit revisionpath.com/iTunes or revisionpath.com/Stitcher to subscribe. Make sure to rate us 5 stars and leave us a review. The more downloads, subscribers, 5-star ratings, and reviews that we get, the more iTunes and Stitcher will help promote the show. This week, I talked with Jacques Dupuis, a designer and developer in Brooklyn, New York. Here we go. Okay, so tell us who you are and what you do.
My name is Jacques Dupuis. I'm a designer and developer. I run a small studio called Dupuis.is.
How did you get started with Dupuis?
It's been a while in the making. It goes back to like going to school for design. I went to Parsons in New York for about 2 years. Before that, I went to Rutgers. I studied film and video. Went to Parsons to study graphic design. I had no money. Somehow I started just learning how to code, just doing websites for people so I could get some cash. And eventually I started working at some pretty small studio spaces and sort of well-respected studios and small digital startups at the time, web studios at the time. And eventually they sort of got big, getting a lot of experience. Worked for CBS Interactive.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a weird experience. It was first called CSTV Sports. It was a startup. It got bought by CBS and then eventually got turned into CBS Interactive. I worked there as a developer for a really long time, for about 8 years. I used to manage like a small group of developers, just building websites. It was almost like managing ESPN. In a way, except it was just very focused in college sports. And, you know, after a while, I decided, you know what, I don't like doing this anymore. just decided, you know what, I'm going to try to do something on my own. And been doing that for the past year and a half now. And it's so far so good. It's going pretty well.
You said that working at CBS was weird. Was it just because you went from like a small shop to a large corporation? Were there other things that made it kind of a weird experience?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was definitely part of it. You know, the studios I worked for, the most people they had was like 15. And I went from going, you know, working with 15 people, most of them who I knew, working to a corporation that had, you know, well, it was a startup at the time. So CSTV had about like maybe 300 people. So it was really big. And then once it got bought by CBS, it became very bureaucratic and just way too large. And it's just harder to get work done. When you work at a small studio, things go a lot slower. It's a very nice pace. You have time to actually create things that look good, that are appealing. And once you go to a larger corporate world, things have to run a lot faster, especially, you know, when you're doing something that's somewhat news-related. Mm-hmm. So things go a lot faster. There's not too much concern about quality. It's more about quantity. And so, like, trying to manage that, especially, you know, for myself, you know, I try to take pride in what I do and, you know, like, writing clean code, like, making sure everything works well and looks good. Having to do that in that sort of environment is, it's tough. It's challenging. And then, you know, having to build products that don't have any real value to it, except if you're a sport fan. Like, you know, how many sport apps can you make before, you know, you get tired? It's like, it has like no real value. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, so I mean, that got tiring after a while. Like, building microsites for Hershey's, like, who cares?
So it sounds like it was more of a production-based sort of thing. I worked at AT&T for 2 years as a senior web designer. I know exactly what you mean. It sort of takes everything that you love about design and basically turns it into like a big bag. And
yeah.
So you're just cranking it out, And there's no soul to it.
No soul.
Yeah.
Has like no real value.
Right.
It's like, what do you do? Like, how And you think, like, you know, some of these sites, like, you know, they get big numbers, but, like, what do you do on these sites? Like, what, why? Like, why are we building this?
And so I guess with that, that's really kind of a big part of why you started your own studio, right? So you can put the, you can sort of get that old feeling back, right?
Yeah. So I could run my own studio. I could sort of create an environment where we're not building projects just so it could be out in the world and people could just consume it. What we want to do is create projects or, you know, build things that have some meaning where you could take your time to create something that's really stellar and also not sort of like buy into this like really crazy tech culture where, you know, everyone has to, or this is part of design culture too, depending on where you work, where you have to work like 80-hour weeks just to put up a site.
Yeah.
That's going to get like 200 hits in a couple of days or, you know, just like these meaningless sites. So like, why do that? Why not just try to like build an environment where you could do good work, have a good work-life balance and just, you know, just experience life to its fullest.
Now, before you studied at Parsons, I know you studied communication design at Parsons, you went to Rutgers and you were studying film and video. What sort of started that switch over from film development to where you are now?
Well, I always wanted to be a designer. I just didn't know at the time how to go about doing it. So when I was at Rutgers, I actually, you know, they do have a graphic design program, but I always thought you had to be a great illustrator to be a graphic designer. And so I wasn't a great illustrator. I could draw a bit, but I was nowhere near like Picasso or anyone like that. Like, great. So I figured, you know, this is, you know, I can't be a designer because I can't draw. So I'll just, you know, I'll do video because, you know, video is a great medium. It incorporates design, it incorporates, you know, motion, photography, sound, all these other things that I do like. And so I just tried to do that for a while. After I graduated, you know, I did some more research and I figured, oh, you know what, I actually can do design. And so I applied to Parsons and I got in and it was great.
Let's go back to a little bit before Rutgers. How did you get started? I know you said you kind of always wanted to be a designer. Did you have a really kind of creative childhood?
Not really. Did stuff like most kids do. Like, you know, kids always like play around. They draw. They, you know, play with toys. So I didn't do anything that was different than what most kids did. Did watch a lot of movies. I remember watching Big. And being like really amazed by like this dude who's like making toys for a living. I was like, well, that's so dope. Like, he has a job where he actually can have fun. And then, yeah, watching Jungle Fever. Yeah, Jungle Fever. Wesley Snipes' character. I can't remember what he was. Was it architect or something? But he had like some sort of design position too. And just being like, wow, that's a really cool job to have. Like, just, you know, doing something where you know, you get to create things. And so I always, you know, just living in America, you know, you're always going to have a, you're going to have to work. And I saw how my parents, or my mom in particular, struggled with work. And it didn't look like it was fun. Like, I saw, you know, other family members, like, you know, didn't have fun at their jobs. They sort of hated it. And that seemed to be like a thing that most people had. So some sort of common thread with most people with their jobs. Like, they hated it for the most part. I always thought, like, oh, you know, being an adult means you have to have a job, so why not have a job that you like? And so I've always like sort of like tried to geared my, I guess, my life in that direction, even at a young age. Like, you know, like, all right, if I'm going to get a job, I don't mind if I don't make too much money. I'd rather just like be happy and try to get a job where it doesn't seem like a job, where it seems like I'm having fun and something creative, where I could be happy and I could, you know, just, you know, I just don't want to be like 45 and be really upset and hate everything in my life.
Flipper Purify. I remember that movie. I can't believe that movie is 20
years old. Yeah, that's a great movie, man.
20 years old now.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great movie. The guy that does all of Spike Lee's posters, all his movie posters, also named Art Sims. Did you have any mentors that kind of helped you along the way?
Some of my first internships went on to become jobs. I want to call them mentors, but I, you know, I sort of looked up to them in some ways. Like, I learned a lot from them. I used to work at Honest for a little bit, for about a year.
Okay.
Excuse me. And actually started out, as an intern there, and I was just there for so long that I eventually got a junior designer title, or designer title. I can't remember which it was. But I saw how they ran their studio, and it was a very small group. It was first, when I first went there, it was just three people. They were doing great work, really amazing work, but they were just like fresh out of school as well. They were maybe a couple years older than I was. And I remember thinking like I had to do like work fast, you know, as a young student. And I just had this thing in my head. I was like, yeah, I have to do work fast. That's what everyone keeps saying. I have to work faster. And I had this whole idea, like, you know, as soon as I stepped into this place, I have to get like really fast about work. And it turned out to be the complete opposite, where, you had to do your work in a timely fashion, but they gave you enough breathing room just to explore ideas and just come up with stuff. And, you know, as a young kid, as an intern too, like giving, like being handed like real projects, where you had the space to do all that, you know, you have space to fail on your own, and, you know, they'll help you, bring you back up, but also give you like, just give you time just to do things. I found that amazing. And I saw like they worked the same way. Like it wasn't just like they were giving it just to me because I was just the intern. Like they took time with all the projects that they worked on. So that became like, mind blowing to me at a very young age. And then from there I worked at Huge for a bit, excuse me. And the owner at the time, he's since left the studio or the agency, but he had so much energy and so much passion about the work he did. It was almost like, it was very Steve Jobs-like. I never met anyone like this before, where he would just get you like really excited about a project that you couldn't do. I mean, like you could do it, but like you had like no sort of like, he always like made you believe that whatever idea you came up with, like you could actually do it, as crazy as it might be. I just remember having like one experience there that really changed my mind, which is like sort of mind-altering. So yeah, I was there, and we were like sort of like brainstorming ideas for websites. I made this mistake. I didn't know it was a mistake at the time, but I was like, yeah, you know, I have this idea, but I'm not sure we can do it. And then the senior designer there at the time, like, come here, was like, never say that. At Huge, we don't think that way. We think, just come up with the idea. If the idea is good, then we'll do it. We'll find a way to do it. And I found that amazing, because most of the time I always, I've seen this with other projects that other people do and other designers, where you sort of you set a boundary for yourself with, oh, I can't do this, so I have to work within these parameters. And just to have this idea like, well, don't worry about this parameter, just try to do it. Mm-hmm. That was like, you know, it's a really small switch in your mind, but it's still really powerful.
Yeah, so something you were talking about earlier about having the space to fail, I feel like is so important when you're starting out, not just with design. I think when you're starting out with anything, it's really important to give yourself the space to fail so you can get better. It reminds me of this thing that Ira Glass had. We were talking about storytelling and writing, and it was sort of along the same lines of, you know, you have to sort of do the work, and
yeah,
the first stuff that you're going to do is going to be really bad, but you have to keep doing it so you can get better.
It also gives you time to think about what you're doing, and also gives you the time to, you know, make sure you make something of quality. And, you know, going from that space again, like, and going to like, if you fast forward to like me working at CBS, where you had no time for anything, like it's like just get it done, get that shit done. And, you know, that's sort of a work environment isn't just that's what I think you'll experience that in most agencies that you go to nowadays, where it's not about the quality so much. It's just about getting the work done and pushing it out there, because, you know, there's you want to make money. You want to keep bringing in more money. It just creates this environment that sort of sucks, this sucky-ass environment that you now have to work in. And, like, you know, it sort of is like crushing and defeating your spirit. And who wants to do that? It sucks.
What keeps you motivated and inspired to do the work that you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I just like doing the work. One, like I really enjoy like being creative. I guess what inspires me is just like talking to other people, close friends who aren't designers at all, but are working on other projects, other creative projects. You know, some musicians just making music on their own and like, you know, going at it for like years. You know, sounding like just making amazing work, that gets almost no credit. Like, you probably won't never hear of them, but you know, hopefully one day you do. Just this passion that they have behind their work and this passion for the craft. I find that inspiring. I have a lot of friends. I have some friends who, you know, do comics. And again, it's the same thing, like this dedication to the craft and just the dedication to the process that I find very inspiring. Even though we don't do anything related, or, you know, I guess comics and graphic design, because you can relate it in some way. But it's just, I find that inspiring. Just people who just take the time to really work on their craft and you know, just make it good, like very, like amazingly good.
You're in New York City. Are you originally from there?
I was born in Queens and then moved to Jersey when I was about 8 years old. Yeah. So, but I've always been between these Jersey and New York.
How is the design scene in New York?
it's good.
You can give me a better answer than that. You can't just be like, oh, it's good. There's something else there. You can open up. Tell me.
I find it weird in some ways. You know, like it's great if you're a designer because there's a whole bunch of influences. Like it's a great city to be in. Crazy museums, like crazy shows. Like there's so much to do here, and all of it's inspiring. Or a lot of it is. And if you're thinking just about experience, good or bad experiences, like you can have plenty of them in New York. And it's great. Being a black designer in this field, excuse me, that's a little weird because just, you know, there's not too many of us out here. I mean, when I say out here, I mean actually employed within design agencies or studios. And just having to sort of navigate through that space, you know, gets a little bit weird. And also just...
How so?
Well... Just the idea of how language, if design's about language and communication, just sometimes the view from a lot of these, the feeling I get from a lot of these agencies and studios, or just the design community in general, is this idea that, you know, there's this utopia feeling, this utopia-like feeling that this world is perfect, and look at this wonderful world that we've created, we make beautiful things, but... It's also at the exclusion of black and Latino folks. So it's a little weird. And it's something where I don't think, this is something where I think a lot of studios or I guess the design community in general, doesn't seem like it likes to own up to. And you think about like a very posh-like culture or WASPy culture, you know, I think sometimes I feel the design community definitely is that. You have your, you know, there's definitely like these hierarchies that play out. You know, you have to navigate through that world somehow. Either you have no idea that it even exists, but, and you know, maybe you have no idea that it exists and you can live comfortably within it. I think if you're a designer, and trying to get into this field and you have any experience, then you'll quickly notice what sort of designs or designers are kind of looked at or I guess up on the hierarchy, the sort of work that they're doing. You know, it's good work, sort of like what it sort of talks to. And how it communicates and the sort of aesthetics that it uses. This language that they're trying to communicate with is something that for some reason they feel either black folks can't do because they're not WASPy in any ways, they're not rich, they're just not those things. Or they're afraid of a black designer who's maybe too black. For them. And by that, I mean like someone who might, this is just a stereotype. I'm not saying it as something I think. Like, they might think that, you know, a black designer might go out and start like putting 40-ounce bottles on some design or, or start, you know, like, oh, this is such a great piece. Let me just like put some graffiti on this and make it more, you know, make it better. So I think they're afraid of black designers using maybe black vernacular or whatnot. I don't know exactly. So
it kind of sounds like there might be a fear of design being interpreted. Well, I want to say interpreted through a black lens, but even that black lens, I think, from what you're telling me, it might be viewed in a very stereotypical fashion. Like it might be, you know, gold chains and baggy street clothes and things.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, and you know, it's a And you know, not that everyone does this. It's just very, it's just hard to navigate through that space. And I think like when you do have designers who are successful, or Black designers who are successful, they're Black designers who can talk or communicate in a vernacular that isn't Black, and that could do that well. They somehow learn how to, I don't want to say hide their Blackness, because that sounds wrong, but they've maybe learned to I guess maybe that's the best way to explain it. Hide the Blackness.
Hide their Blackness
in ways to make the white overlords more comfortable.
Okay. Now I feel like so design is really sort of becoming this more eclectic thing. I think at least within the past 15 years or so, it has, because of technology. So technology has really standardized a lot of things, which, you know, in design, I think we're more so of a national or regional thing. Like now, anyone can really use Photoshop. Anyone can use Illustrator. Not saying that these are tools that have to be used to do design, but certainly technology has helped standardize them in this field as tools that you would use. And I feel like designers of color might be benefiting from those changes, but I don't think it's still in a very equal fashion in terms, well, not equal, let me not say equal. They're probably not benefiting from it in a fashion that lets their work be seen, that lets it be visible, that sort of puts them on the same stage or playing field.
Well, I mean, even to get like, to get Photoshop nowadays, you have to pay what, like $50 for the Creative Studio?
Oh yeah, if you do the Creative
Cloud. Yeah, unless you're getting pirated software, which, you know, that's I'm not against that at all. If that's what you need to do. Come on, because like, you know, $50 a month is a lot of money.
That's true. Even though I think the student price is maybe like $30, but
so that's a barrier already, like for some people. And so, yeah, if you could pirate it, yeah, go ahead and do that. But assuming that you're not pirating the software, then that becomes a barrier in itself. You know, I'll give you a perfect example, actually. When I was a student in a design school, we always had these projects we had to spend money on. And I was broke, man. I had like very little money. Like if I had $20 for a week, that was a good week. So we had this one project where, you know, the teacher assigned us like to take all these photos in this Holga camera, and to develop these black and white films like cost like $15 to $20, and you have to develop like two or three rolls, and you have to do this for a project, and the project was due like in 2 weeks. Like I didn't have money to like buy film, get it developed, and so I couldn't do this project. And so I mean, that was a barrier. I couldn't, like, how do I do this project? I couldn't. It's like it was almost close to $100, which I couldn't afford at the time. I had no parents to give it to me. Oh, my mom couldn't afford to give that to me. It was like way too much. So, you know, I talked to the professor, and it's like, look, like I can't do this. Like I really have no money to do this at all. Like I literally have no money. And at the time I was like biking to school. I wouldn't even take the subways in Manhattan. The teacher was like, she did not care at all. She was just like, you know what? She brought up how she was from, her parents grew up in Nazi camps, and how like they survived. And so I shouldn't care, you know, look at my experience, like you having to pay $100 to do this does not mean shit to me. Just get it done. Ugh. Yeah. So it was like, I mean, how do you navigate through that? Like that was my experience. Like that's, I'm sure there's plenty of other kids that have similar experiences where, you know, you have to get a project done, and there's these requirements behind it that like spending like real cash that you can't just, you can't shell out for. You just can't. I mean, yeah, I mean, Photoshop is a barrier. Even technology, like to buy a computer, you could get Windows, but, you know, you want to start playing on Macs. Macs are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And then you have to buy programs for that Mac. Like, shit's expensive. It's a very expensive field to get into, like, directly, especially when you have no cash and you have very little money.
That's true. That's very true. So, for people, let's say you were to give advice for someone that wants to start out in this field, what would you tell them? Like, let's say specifically a Black designer, what would you tell them?
Just keep, oh, damn. I would say just read up on the history of design. You have the internet, which is a great way to learn about how to do things. especially nowadays, it seems like every sort of resource that wasn't available when I was in school is on the internet. If you can, go to your library, get books on design, learn from the great masters, learn about how to use grids, learn about typography more than anything. Not just the actual, fonts, but just learn about spacing, kerning, just the meat and potatoes behind design. Don't think about style so much. Style comes and goes. You don't need that at all. If you have good fundamentals, then you'll get really far in this design practice. I mean, that's just starting out. If you get further than that, just try to make as many mistakes as you can. Just keep exploring. Don't buy into trends. And I don't know. I think that's probably a good place to start. From there, I wouldn't know. I really don't know how to advise someone to go into the practice if one of the barriers is going to a design school. Just say apply. Just figure it out.
Just kind of like a trial and error.
Yeah, I wish I could give something more concrete than that. But like, if you want to go to, if you're really interested in doing the design work, I'd say first try to go to one of these schools, Parsons, SVA. If you can't do that, take a design course online. And if you can't do it, just try to read up as much as you can. I'm all about just trying to figure stuff out on your own. I didn't go to school to program at all. I learned that on my own. There's these wonderful classes nowadays, but when I was starting, getting that sort of information was so hard. It's really hard. You have to buy a book, if anything. And those books are even hard to get too. Mm-hmm. Just if you want to do it, man, if you have the passion for it, you'll find a way.
I totally agree with that. I know when I was learning design, I grew up in the Deep South, dirt road country. And we had a bookstore, but the bookstore didn't have any computer books. It was mostly romance novels and shit like that.
Yeah.
And the nearest bookstore where you could buy a computer book was over 50 miles away.
So what did you
exactly.
Do?
So I started sort of learning about design and coding and things because my mother worked at a community college, and the community college had a computer lab. So there was access to the internet, but I didn't have any books. The library that they had there had a handful of books, but it was on stuff like Fortran and COBOL and BASIC.
Yeah.
It wasn't on HTML or anything. So I learned, like you said, about having the space to fail and making mistakes. I would pull up a website. I would look at the source code.
That's a great way to do it.
We're talking mid-90s here. This is 95, 96. So there's not really any books out to teach you how to make a website. There really weren't even any tutorials online to teach you how to make a website. It was a lot of trial and error and seeing what worked and what didn't work. And it wasn't until, I didn't have a computer until I got to college, which was in 99, 2000. And it was right around that time that I got my first programming book. Well, my first HTML programming book. So I completely know what you mean. You have to really get out there and try to find it. But it's depending on what your circumstances are, it can be really difficult to just make that step.
Yeah, for real.
Are there any personal projects that you're working on right now?
The way my studio works is every sort of project is getting funneled through the studio. So, we have client work, we have projects that we sort of just want to do, I guess, personal projects. I'm trying to work, trying to do a video for a musician a couple of months now. We're still in the pre-stages, just coming up with ideas and doing some rewrites. So that's one project. I'm also doing a project for a music-based project where we have, right now the tentative name is just 3x3x3. That's not the final name, but it's getting three MCs and just having them each rap three tracks and then all behind one producer and having just sort of trying to release it in a very non-practical way, just on a website, the free download, and just trying to come up with a compelling way to have someone experience that music. So that's another project. And there's client work that we're working on also. Yeah, it's still in the pre stages. I'm hoping is that we have enough time where we could actually execute them like really well and to become just become fun projects to take on and just maybe I could explore some different UX ideas or just interaction ideas through them. So hopefully it'll work out.
Where do you see yourself within the next 5 years or so?
I don't know. Just living comfortably. By comfortable, I mean just I have enough to eat. I could feed my small family, and just continue doing what I want to do. I think one of my bigger goals is just to be to be happy. But to me, that means being able to sort of make my own time and do what it is that I really want to do, and not just do it for someone else and do it for someone else's recognition. So, again, like when I was working before, like working for CBS, the big problem I had was just like, man, like I'm spending all this energy, this great energy that I have, and we all have this energy, right? We all, we're all creatives in some way, and we all have like this, if you're a designer, if you're someone who codes, you have this power, and to use that sort of power and energy to produce something that's somewhat meaningless is like a waste. Right, like I don't know. I think about like where our talented minds are like just spending their time on. We have these great mathematicians working up ways to game the stock system so that some people can make millions in minutes or in seconds, in milliseconds. We have designers creating the next a better looking Tide box so people can actually are more compelled to buy it. And then you have some programmers programming microsites for Hershey's campaign or Dr. Pepper campaign or whatnot. And so you have this all this energy that's being wasted on meaningless things. So it's my long term goal is hopefully we could I could sort of divert some of that energy, in my energy in particular, and people who are are hiring and bringing as interns as just working on projects that have some sort of meaning. And maybe giving back to the community. Like we talked about. So I'm going on a little bit of a tangent here.
No, go ahead.
But we talked about just the idea of getting more blacks into the design field, black Latinos in particular. What I find very funny is that we have these agencies that are creative agencies, and like they're supposed to be making money off of being creative, but they can't come up with ways on how to get black interns or black Latino interns or even just or people into that culture, right? So like how can you call yourself a creative then? Like it's a very simple thing to do, at least to me. If I'll tell you about a project that we're trying to do here, for example.
Okay.
Now I'm a small studio. I don't have a lot of money. I don't bring in that much. I bring in enough where I could feed myself and maybe hire a couple of designers. But even then, like there's some power with that, right? If we need more designers, more black Latino designers in the field, we could bring them in as interns, and this is something we're trying to do right now. Bring them in as interns, give them a real project to work on, right? You have a lot of nonprofits, probably in your area, in New York, we're littered with a whole bunch of nonprofits who can't hire a full-time designer, who can't hire a full-time developer to help them with creating a new website. So our idea is to maybe... is to take bring in these interns, a black Latino intern who doesn't have too much experience in the design world or development world yet, have them work on a real live project with a nonprofit who probably can't afford an agency fee. Maybe they could afford just to pay these interns, right? And that's not going to cost too much. And have a mentor or someone who could sort of guide them through the whole process and have them build like a complete site. And now they have real world experience, real work experience. They have a site where they could actually go out into the world and maybe get a job with. I mean, it's a small building block. It's a small step, but it's at least a step in the right direction where either they could find out, I don't like designing. I don't like developing. And I don't want to go this way. Or they find out, I do like this enough where I could take this and I could build something else with it. It's really easy to take like these really small steps to like bring in black and Latino developers, designers into this world, into this creative field. It's just trying to come up with a way to do it, or taking up the time to do it. I think most of these places they're so concerned about money, about making money, and so they don't want to take the time out to do that. Yeah, they don't have the space to fail. Yeah, exactly.
So anyone that sort of comes in, they've got to like get it like on the first try, it seems like.
Yeah, and there's also this idea that, and I see this more in the tech world, where we can only...
I feel like that's such a contradiction, though.
No, it is. It is. It is. I think it's a complete contradiction. Like, something else I see in the tech world is that they always have this idea of like, oh, we want rock star designers or we want rock star developers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then it gives no... It's like you have to come in and be great already before you can even get a job.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, how the fuck does that happen? How does that work? Why can't you just get like a dude who's really passionate about learning, pair him up with a really great developer, and then they learn together. Or this younger dude just learns from that one developer. That's how it works. And if you're thinking about cost, like if like cost is a main issue or even an issue, you save so much from doing that because you could bring an intern or not an intern, but a young developer. And you could pay him like at half the cost. And you get that person to actually learn on the job. It's like, what the... Dude, just do that.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
It's real funny you mentioned that. I have a cousin who is graduating from Carnegie Mellon pretty soon. And he's kind of going through that same problem where like he's trying to find work, like postgraduate work. But it's like they want you to come in and have all this experience and have done all these things. But it's like, well... When have I had time to do that? I've been in
school. Right.
When right. have I had time to become this rock star designer when I'm still learning? Like I'm still a year out. Like where do I have time for this? So that thing about having that space to fail, I think that creates a contradiction for up and coming designers to really become good in this field, to become, you know, to work for big agencies and work for big companies. If you have to come in already being the best.
Yeah, exactly.
That can be a real problem. Well, listen, I don't want to end this off on a completely dour note. what music are you listening to nowadays? What TV shows are you watching? Stuff like that.
I just started watching, what's that new show on HBO with Woody Harrelson and...
True Detective.
Yeah, I just started watching that. That's really great. Besides that, I don't really watch too much TV, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I actually got finished just watching House of Cards. Yeah, that was cool. Music-wise, I used to DJ a lot. I'm starting to get back into it. I try to collect the old records. Mm-hmm. I'm into a lot of Brazilian records, a lot of funk. Also, jazz fusion. That's Bobby Humphries. Oh, I love Bobby Humphries. New music, mainly, I'm really, no, I come from the East Coast, so, you know, there's this idea of, not saying I don't buy into this, but this idea of, like, you know, hip-hop's on the East Coast, and the East Coast has to go these great lyrical rappers. But I'm really impressed, especially, like, the past, like, couple of years, maybe 5-6 years, really, of the talent that's come out of L.A. Like, there's, like, so many great rappers coming from there, Tyler, the Creator is really good. Kendrick Lamar is amazing. Other people from the Odd Future camp, Earl Sweatshirt. Like lyrically, these guys are just like killing it. I don't see anyone in New York that could compare to these guys. Just in the youthful spirit, which is something I feel like hip hop was missing for a very long time. This idea like, you know, you can make making mistakes as a young kid. And being completely, in some ways, in a bad way, misogynistic about your views on women and whatnot. But, you know, just also being playful about it, you know. Anyway, it's a really weird combination. Yeah, I'm just impressed by the music coming out from the West Coast right now.
Just to wrap things up, where can our readers find out more about you online?
You can check out my website, dupo.is, that's dupo.is. You can, I guess, follow me on Twitter at jdupoux, or just, hit me up on email if you want to ever talk. Or I guess maybe Twitter works better. But if you want to hit me up on email, it's Jacques, Jacques, @ DUPO. That is, yeah. If you're a Black designer and just want some direction, or just need some help, or just want some advice, just hit me up, and I'm free to talk.
Sounds good. All right, Jacques, thank you again so much for taking time out of your day. I think it's been a really good interview, especially a lot of the stuff that we talked about with Black designers and diversity in this field. It's been really great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, man.
All right. And that's it for this week. Big thanks to Jacques Dupuy, and thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to take our survey at revisionpath.com/survey and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Revision Path is a 318 Media project. If you like what we're doing with these podcasts, you can help sponsor the show. Contact information will be included in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.